Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Today's episode trigger warnings are explicit sexual content.
And I have a Spotify review, and this one comes from Possum.
Possum!
And they said, listening to this kinky, disturbing smut makes me less depressed. Thank you. I'm always very entertained by this podcast with a little rat.
Well, Possum.
You're welcome, Possum.
We love you, Possum.
It's rough out there, and if we can be a little light for you, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Smutty little light.
We're always here for you.
And this week, we're telling Riley all about An Inheritance of Monsters by Kate Corvin. And how many stars did you guys give it on Goodreads? I saw Jenner's review, and it made me laugh.
I gave it a 3. It was very entertaining. I just was not committed to any character particularly. I liked the idea of the book, though, like the whole concept of the void and stuff, which we'll get into, but I like that. I just wasn't attached to literally anybody at all.
Yeah, like someone could have died and you would have been like, oh dang.
Moving on.
I gave it a 4 and my comment that Charlotte laughed at, and I said, you know what, hell yeah. Yeah, that's basically the entire essence of the book.
Yeah,
well, I gave it a 3.5, so I was in the middle of you guys. It did remind me of A Lady of Rooksgrave Manor.
Oh, that was like when she fucked the entire book, right? It was like the whole book was just fucking.
Yeah, she fucked like a gargoyle, an invisible man.
A vampire.
A sphinx.
She said, greens, beans, tomatoes, potatoes, you name it.
Yeah, that was her. And that's basically what happens in this book, too. So our female main character's name is Juno, and her and a group of friends have arrived by boat to Duskwood Island. They all run a paranormal investigation show that they're trying to take to a cable network, but nobody knows that Juno can actually see spirits, which was so fun. They, like, have a little YouTube channel where they do ghost hunts.
Cute. Mm-hmm.
They're going to be on this island for a month with no contact to the outside world, and Juno just completed an interview with a native of the mainland town where she was told that seeing a statue on the island in the morning is a bad omen. She's looking at the statue right now, and it's the morning, and she's like, dang, sucks. And the statue has octopus tentacles and a face that seems like it's screaming out to the bay. And she's like weirdly drawn to this statue. The boat captain drops them at the dock and is like, see you in a month, maybe, and then leaves. Everyone on the mainland knows that Duskwood Manor is fucked up. There's something wrong with it. So they're like, good luck to you.
You're gonna die here.
They take a selfie in front of the statue, but when Juno looks at the phone, she sees that her face is smudged out, like how it was in the ring.
Scary. I'd say, get me back on that boat.
No, it's gone. You're stuck.
But her friends, Crispy and Sierra's faces are crystal clear. So it's only her face that's smudged.
One of her friends' name is Crispy?
Yeah, it says his real name. That's what they call him.
Okay.
His name is like Cristiano or something like that. And her and Sierra have a very strange relationship. Like, they're frenemies, and then her and Crispy are actually friends. They're like, oh, that's weird. And then they retake the photo and it comes out normal. They lug their suitcases up to Duskwood Manor, where they'll be staying with 5 other teams of paranormal investigators who received the invite. They knock on the door and it's opened by a fancy looking old lady who greets Juno by name. She introduces herself as Elizabeth Marsh, and Juno notices a weird skeleton key on a chain around her neck. They step inside the foyer, and Juno sees an ominous black shadow behind the open closet door. Because remember, she can see spirits and stuff.
I think the black shadow is a little bit different than what she normally sees, so she's immediately like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, because she sees ghosts, like spirits of people, and then this is just like a black shadow thing.
It describes it as being so dense, you can't see, like, anything at all.
Yeah. They head to the parlor where the other teams are, and Juno and her crew immediately recognize most of them as rivals, including her ex-college boyfriend, whose name is Carson. So, like, I think this is, like, a super small, tight-knit community, the paranormal investigator community, so they all kind of know each other, and they all have history with each other.
Okay.
And their history's not great, because they're, like, competitors and rivals. There's only one person there that they don't recognize, Rosalie. Elizabeth tells them she wanted to finally invite someone to the island to share its remarkable story and to witness the natural phenomenon of the Fusilli Comet when it passes over in 2 weeks' time. And remember this comet, it's important. She tells them they're free to film and explore anywhere in the manor, aside from her personal bedroom and the cellar. But Juno knows that the beginning of this manor's history began in the cellar, where Sarah Marsh was burned alive for being a witch. So every woman that's lived at this manor has died, and every husband have died too. And they're all like weird, kind of violent, gory deaths.
Okay.
Ever since then, every husband for four generations of Marsh women have died by suicide.
Why?
I don't know. Elizabeth begins the tour, but Juno hangs back when it seems like the room gets darker and she can feel a brush of something on the inside of her thigh.
Something hissed, a displeased exhale that stirred the hair near my face, and the shadow seemed to grip me, trying to hold me in place. They clung to my legs, plucked at my clothes, my ponytail swinging in invisible hands. Then I felt the open door and practically stumbled through. The other side of the hall met my hands, and I finally opened my eyes. The lights were back on, the sun filtering through a window at the far end of the hall.
What's happening?
As she rushes toward the group, she hears something breathe her name. So it's like, Juno.
Hell no.
They each get assigned their own rooms, with each team having a good amount of privacy from the others. Crispy sets up all his equipment to catch any ghosties. So he has his little thermal cameras and, I don't know, whatever people use.
Hell yeah. All I'm thinking of is ghost hunters. That is all I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
That's like
yeah.
What I'm picturing.
Uh-huh. That night, Juno sets up a spirit box in the bathroom and goes for a soak in the tub to see if she can chit-chat with any spirits. So I guess it's like a box where she can talk and then the spirit should, in theory, be able to speak back to her through this little speaker thing.
Yeah, those things are fucking badass.
So cool.
Yeah, if you believe in that stuff.
Charlotte, do you?
No.
You don't? You don't believe in, no. Like, anything paranormal?
No.
That is crazy.
You die, and then you're dead.
What? I don't believe that. I can't believe that.
Why? It's like sleeping.
No.
That's the best.
I believe that, like, our soul or something.
We're just like a minuscule rock flying through an infinite void of the universe.
Yeah. Sarah, I can't think about it too much.
I don't know. I just feel like the little energy of myself will go on and be somewhere else. There's no way that it's just over.
Right, right.
I'm gonna spiral later. Energy cannot be created nor destroyed, girl.
Okay, but like, you die.
But your body dies, not your soul. Not the essence of you.
What is essence?
The jus, the jus. The jus.
Jenna, you're never going to convince Charlotte, ever.
If you ever croak before me, Charlotte, please come to me in a little ghosty form so I can be like, sup, girl, told ya.
Okay, but like, I'll be dead.
Sure.
So she's in the bath with her little spirit box. She introduces herself and tells anyone who wants to talk to her to speak through the box, but then she hears, Juno.
Hell no.
I'd say, okay. Like, okay, what else do you have to say? Yeah.
Yeah, you know my name. We established that. But it's not through the box. It's in the room.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I said, fuck this box. I don't need no box.
Well, I'm here with you now, girl. Let me in that tub.
Something soft and silky wraps around her body and drags her underwater. Only the bottom of the bathtub is gone.
Wait, what?
Yeah, she like falls through the bathtub and she's in the water. She's just... When she struggles to breach the surface, she finds she's not in the bathroom anymore. It's like she's in the middle of the sea and she can see a bunch of bioluminescence in the waves.
Oh.
She reaches around her and feels what's holding her, and it's a giant octopus tentacle. As she goes back underwater, a tentacle goes over her mouth, feeding her oxygen, and she doesn't feel the need to breathe anymore. Then she gets a glimpse of what the tentacles are attached to.
The monster they were attached statue came into view as the rest of its body illuminated with rings, or his body. My first wild thought was that he was human, but humanoid was the closest I could come, and that was being generous. He possessed a head, torso, and arms. Two gleaming blue eyes looked back at me. No sclera in sight, but his nostrils were slits, and where his mouth should be were several smaller tentacles. But his torso was human enough, with broad shoulders and muscled arms. The tentacle drew me closer, and I realized he was examining me as intently as I was examining him, and I got my confirmation that he was most definitely male. I couldn't see much of his lower half very clearly in the dark water, but just below that chiseled stomach, his body flared into a mass of tentacles. Several were much thicker than the others, with blunt crown tips twining around me and continuing his exploratory touching. From their firmness and the tiny still at the end of each one, I could picture what they were meant for all too clearly. The tentacles reeled me in, drawing me closer. One of them covered my mouth again, feeding me the air I desperately needed. And another crept upwards along my thigh. A faint tickling sensation started up my shoulder and slid over my chest, tracing the contour of one of my breasts.
Oh. He's just got dick tentacles.
Wait, and he doesn't have a mouth? It's just tentacles? For a mouth?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
And he has like a Voldemort nose.
Oh! And snake eyes.
I kind of picture his mouth, the guy from Futurama.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Zoidberg.
Yeah.
I picture Davy Jones from Pirates of the Caribbean. So many good ones. Yep. She realizes this octopus monster doesn't want to harm her, so she decides to touch it back. She reaches for a tentacle and its rings flare red and speaks her name in a deep male voice. He puts a tentacle to his chest and says, Zirin. So that's his name. He says, I am Zirin. She looks down and sees an infinite source of yellow rings and panics to get to the surface. So it's like an infinitely huge tentacle not belonging to this man coming out from the depths of whatever ocean she's in.
Stop. My stomach hurts.
She panics to get to the surface, and when she gets there, she's back in the bathroom wondering what the heck just happened. So she's back in the tub. When she turns the lights on and looks in the mirror, she can see smears of bioluminescence all over her body. So it was real. Whatever just happened really happened.
How do you even explain that to anyone?
I mean, they're all like paranormal investigators, so I feel like if you were going to have to explain it, this would be the group of people to explain it to.
True. Yeah.
She heads to the bedroom, still wet and naked, but little does she know, she's being watched by a ghost man named Voril, who goes from closet to closet in the manor. And he's the same ghost man who touched her inner thigh earlier, and the sight of her wet, glowing, naked body has him immediately grabbing his hard ghost cock with his clawed hand.
Without thinking, I reach down, wrapping my claws around my own cock to feel softness, hot and wet, instead of this sharp grasp. A low groan purred out of me as she stretched out one leg to examine it, revealing the tentacle marks on her thigh and the soft, still, wet lips of her pussy.
She hears him and rushes to the closet to inspect, but he poofs off into the void before she can catch him. She goes to her bed and draws a quick sketch of the octopus man in her trusty black notebook, so she takes notes on everything she encounters in this black notebook. Before she falls asleep, her pen falls and rolls under the bed.
Okay.
She wakes up in the middle of the night hearing sounds from under her bed. She uses her phone's flashlight and sees there are perfectly round, smooth pebbles under there. So no more pen, just pebbles. Then the whole bed begins to vibrate as she picks them up, and she thinks to herself it sounds more like a giant cat purring than an earthquake. So it's like...
Ew, I don't like that at all.
She decides to see what happens if she leaves a bobby pin under the bed, and 5 minutes later, she feels a presence.
I held my breath, frantically tapping the phone again to keep the light on, and something crept out from that dark gap below me. A clawed hand, the color of midnight, big enough to crush my entire skull with one squeeze. Dark hair dusted the back of it, rising along a muscled furry arm. My heart had launched back into overtime, threatening to burst as I watched unreality become reality in front of my eyes. It reached out, hooked the end of the bobby pin on one of those sharp, deadly claws, and retreated under the bed again. Another massive vibration shook the bed. A purr of what? Happiness? I had the distinct impression that the owner of the claws was pleased by my offering.
He said, oh, a bobby pin. Thank you. I need it.
A dried flower appears in place of the bobby pin. So he gave her a little gift back.
Cute little big kitty.
She thanks whoever is doing this, saying the gifts are lovely. And then she hears more purring and she sees the claws again. And it's leaving her a sock.
It's like a giant cat saying, look what I found for you.
She says, it's an excellent sock, and a deep voice is like, she likes the sock. She offers for whoever is down there to come up on the bed and turns off the phone flashlight. She can see the outline of a 10-foot tall, furry, four-armed creature. So four arms and two legs.
Ah.
With a human torso and a face with six eyes and a smiling face filled with sharp teeth. And she's like, oh, you're a big boy. She says that to him. She gives him her name and he tells her he is called Rask.
Rask. Okay.
So now we have Rask, Voril, and Zirin.
When he rose on those massive thighs, still curiously leaning towards me, I had a good view of his entire body. His torso, covered in that dark, leathery skin, descended in hard dips and ridges, forming a chiseled V that would make a bodybuilder sick with jealousy. And like Zirin, what hung between those thighs was 100% male, with an extra 50% of raw, primal masculinity heaped on top. It was hard to stop the blush from rising. I wasn't a virgin by any means, but I'd never had 9 inches of cock as thick around as my fists waved in my face. In fact, most guys would be comparable to a baby carrot next to Rask. He seemed completely at ease with the fact that I was studying his anatomy. There was something different about his equipment. Well, besides the size, it looked like there was a thick bulge at the base. He looked down at himself, following my eyes. Do I frighten you? Mutely, I nodded. Well, yeah, of course you do. You're a giant man thing.
He's like a cat man.
Also, I love how she like is like, yeah, he's all male. Look at that cock. I don't think that would be like, obviously these are smut books, but like, I don't think I would be like, oh my God, look at that dick.
Well, I mean, if it's like 9 inches.
And it's just hanging right there.
Yeah, I would take notice.
I know, but I don't think I would be like, oh God, I'm not a virgin. She's like, man, maybe I could sit on that.
Maybe she can, I don't know. Rask gets upset and starts to scurry off. So when she says she's frightened, he's like, no, and he scurries away.
Oh.
But she's like, no, wait, I've just never seen anything like you before. She reaches out to touch his shoulder, but a noise startles him and he disappears back under the bed. She tries to lure him back with more bobby pins, but he's gone. So she falls asleep and wakes up the next day determined to find more monsters. I feel like she's found enough monsters for a lifetime.
Yeah. She's been there for so little. And I feel like she's already done so much.
Yeah, this is her first night.
Yeah, what the fuck?
At breakfast, Crispy goes through the surveillance footage from the night before, but there was some sort of interference that resulted in multiple hours of footage just being lost. Juno wonders which of the monsters from last night was responsible for this, but doesn't tell anyone about her weird-ass night. She goes to her room to freshen up before she heads back out to meet up with everyone, and she leaves her lip gloss under her bed as a gift for Rask. Later on, she's exploring the library when she finds a secret door that leads to a hidden room. Obviously, she goes inside alone, because why wouldn't you? And she sees a painting that looks exactly like what she feels she's been experiencing, and she asks if this is him. It's just a painting of a shadow with pinprick eyes. A deep voice behind her says, "It is one of my kind." She asks if he was in her closet last night, and he says he was. Juno asks if he's going to hurt her, but he says he has no intentions to. He's just curious about her. She says she's curious about him too, and he asks her to turn out her flashlight, so she obeys, and then she can feel him almost solidify, but he's still a shadow. But like, a solid shadow?
Okay.
He caresses her skin and tells her not to be afraid because she doesn't need the light when he is here. Then she holds out her hand, and he grabs it with his own. She starts to touch up his arm, but then his shadows start to grip all around her body, and she tells him to trust her. So he relaxes and she feels up his torso. He is ripped.
Obviously.
And then they just start feeling all over each other's bodies until she reaches his skull. And at the top, she feels a set of horns. And he's running his claws through her hair. And she's starting to feel a little bit horned up. But the monster can sense this and tenses, telling her he will bring her back to her kind. She asks for his name and he tells her his name is Voril.
Voril.
She tells him she wants to see him again and he tells her he'll be back for her. Then Crispy walks in asking who she's talking to and the room is completely empty except for the two humans. A while later, she's exploring the gardens and starts to follow a trail that leads to a rocky beach with another identical statue facing out to the ocean. She sees a glowing pale man walking toward it, and it's a ghost, the kind of ghost that she's used to seeing. She pulls out her phone and tries to get some photos, but one of the rival investigators walks up, ruining her shots, and it's a girl named Eloise. Juno is instantly filled with rage. She has some sort of past with this woman, and she hates her guts, so they have a little spat, and Juno storms off to find Crispy. determined not to let this bitch ruin her day. She heads to the shower where, unbeknownst to her, Zirin is watching her through the water. He'd seen her on the beach too, talking to another woman, but the other woman had an aura about her that smelled like rot and decay, and he did not like it. He reaches a tentacle out through the water, and she takes it, and he brings her to the void again. He puts an air bubble up to her face, and now she can breathe. He sees that she's looking down all scared at the abyss, and he knows when she was here last time, she saw the Elder One, and that freaked her out. And that's what all the yellow rings were, that were, like, just infinitely long.
Yeah, that would freak out anyone.
Yes.
I never want to see that in my life.
He decides to bring her somewhere safe and asks if he can bring her to his home, and she nods. He brings her to an island where she can finally breathe some air, and he shows her a grotto with glowing walls. They finally get to chat for real, and she's asking if this place is real, and he assures her that it is. She bites her bottom lip, which gets his breathing tentacles hard. He wonders if she desires him like he desires her. His tentacles start to explore her body, which is naked because he just took her from the shower, but Juno doesn't feel anything but a warm heat low in her belly. She likes this, and she doesn't really know why. She's kind of into him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Our girl's got a very open mind.
She does.
I mean, every time she saw one of these guys, she was thinking about their dick, so.
Yeah.
I think she's down.
His suction cups are sticking and unsticking to her, and when one pops off her inner thigh, her clit pulses, and she's like, should I ask him if he wants to, like, hook up or something?
Yeah, do it.
It was ridiculous. I had no problem talking to a normal guy, but a monster? Suddenly, I had no idea what to say. Zirin cocked his head. Yes? Then the searching tentacle slid over my pussy as it tried to wrap around my thigh. I gasped, my back arching involuntarily. He just parted me, barely brushing against my clit, but I was already swollen and aching, driven by that fire that had burst to life in me. A low noise rumbled from the monster who had me in his grasp. The gleam in his blue eyes wasn't curiosity now, but intent. The tentacle that had been exploring my shoulder blade twined around me, grazing the underside of my breast. After a long, agonizing moment, it wrapped around the globe in its grasp, one of his suckers latching onto my nipple and squeezing.
Oh, I wonder how that'd feel. A little suction cup on your nipple?
Go find you an octopus. Stick it to your nipple.
Come here, little octopusy.
He uses one of his claws to stroke her other nipple and asks if she enjoys this, and she says yes. Yes, she does. He flips her around so her back is against his chest, and she feels his breathing tentacles wrap around her ankles, pulling her legs apart. He tells her that she will be his mate, and she's like, whoa, 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 what? But then she's like, whatever, I trust this octopus man, let's do it.
Oh, girl. It was easier than I thought it would be to give myself over to the sensation, letting my hips roll every time his tentacle slid over my clit, teasing my pussy. My eyes closed as I focused on that building heat and on the way he trembled against my back. Zirin made sexy sounds in my ear, grunting when I rolled against him, rubbing my clit on his tentacle. The appendages on my breasts squeezed tighter, sucking hard on my nipples with every roll. His mouth explored my neck, tentacles gently circling my throat as he kissed me. I knew his mouth wasn't quite human, but it was soft and warm, his tongue stroking a path along my jaw. I just found a perfect rhythm, hips riding the thick base of the tentacle while I gasped and moaned in his arms when he decided to switch it up on me. The tentacle slid over me again, then I felt it shift, and one of those suction cups brushed against my clit. I bit down hard on my lower lip, tingling all over. The sucker wrapped around my clit, suctioning itself to me.
She's never felt anything like this and just comes everywhere. She asks him if he wants any reciprocation, but he tells her this is about her right now. They have all the time in the world for her to reciprocate.
Oh, a true king.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
They have a little pillow talk about how her family is dead and stuff. And then his eyes dart to the entrance of the grotto and a sky that is filling with fog and lightning. And he's like, oh shit, it's a void storm. I have to bring you back now. He dives into the water with her and tells her things come during the void storm, things she would not want to meet. And then she lands alone on the porcelain of the shower. She goes to bed and sees that the lip gloss is gone, but there is no sign of Rask. There's also no Voril in the closet. She jots down some notes in her black notebook and falls asleep. The next morning, everybody seems to be in a bad mood. All of their footage from the night before was corrupted, and somebody left a turd under Carson's bed. Juno giggles because she knows this was Rask. Mrs. Marsh walks in and warns them to stay inside today because there's a storm coming and it won't be safe to be out on the beach. They ask for how long and she's like, I don't know, maybe like a week? And now Juno's bummed because if the storms are linked, that could mean a week without her monsters if that's what's keeping them away.
How's she gonna get off?
I don't know. Crispy, Sierra, and Juno decide to try and get some outside work done before the storm arrives, and Crispy suggests that they go over to the statue she found and take some shots. Juno is hella down because maybe she'll see the ghost man again, but as they're walking over, she hears what sounds like a woman singing. Nobody else seems to hear it, though. She sees the white wisp of a ghost out on the waves, and it's the man. He throws himself onto the beach, and the singing suddenly stops. The man looks to the statue, and his face is filled with relief upon seeing it, and then climbs into the statue's mouth. Literally nobody but Juno is seeing this, and then the rain starts to get crazy. Juno can hear the woman singing again, and they all rush to get back inside, but Crispy slips and falls and breaks his whole ass leg. Like, his foot is on backwards.
Ah, and they're, like, the only ones on this island, right?
Yeah.
She can see the bone poking through his pants, and there's just blood everywhere. They drag him back to the manor, and he swears it felt like somebody pulled him down.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mrs. Marsh calls on the radio for the Coast Guard when they finally get inside so Crispy can go seek medical attention. He leaves his equipment and tells the girls to carry on without him, and then he's whisked away. And they said that it seemed like there was a break in the storm just big enough for the Coast Guard to get there, take Crispy, and leave, and then it's just crazy weather again. Mrs. Marsh makes Juno some tea when they're alone, and she confesses that she can see ghosts, and Mrs. Marsh is like, yeah, I know, that's why I brought you here. And now Juno's like, what is even going on with this? Mrs. Marsh tells her about a man who died out by the beach they were just at in a capsizing accident during a storm, and now Juno is almost positive that that's the ghost she's been seeing in the water. She heads to bed, and the storm is getting absolutely wild outside. Then she sees three pairs of eyes watching her from under the bed.
Oh.
Rask picks her up, and he takes her to his home in the void. He lives in a little cavern, and he has hordes of treasure everywhere. Anything that anyone has ever dropped under the bed is in this cavern.
He said, oh, that's mine now. I'm going to take this to my home.
And she's utterly amazed at what people leave behind under beds.
He just has a ton of shit.
Yeah.
He picks her up again and takes her onto the black beach, and she realizes she's been there before, so it's linked with Duskwood Island. So the void is set up exactly as Duskwood Island is.
Okay.
And she stiffens when she sees that there are idols in the void as well. He tells her that she can study them after he cleans her and takes care of her.
So the idols are like the statue.
Yeah. Mm. So the same exact statues are in both places too.
Okay.
He wades into the ocean to start scrubbing her body, and she tells him about her career, why she does it, what she doesn't like anymore about it. And she looks down at him, and he is rock hard.
Of course he is.
Of course.
She wants to fuck, but they can't.
She was too small to push into. I would need the Klee Prince to come and work her size for me, using his slick to stretch her out before her body could accept my cock without pain. Who is the Klee Prince? What do you mean? What's he saying? He says, I need another guy to come fuck her.
She gasps and just starts to grind into him when crackles of energy emit from the shore. Rask knows that the Elder One is here to claim his mate before the comet arrives. Juno knows immediately that it's not a void storm. This is completely different. And that's when she sees Voril in his true form with very minimal shadows.
Charcoal gray skin glimmered as he took form, emerging from the cloud of shadows. The regal horns curving back over his head gleamed like obsidian, as did the claws on his fingers and on his toes. His muscular thighs became knees that curved backwards. His legs pointed differently than a human's. What the fuck is happening? He was so tall, towering nearly 12 feet high. What is he? How? How? I don't even know what to picture.
This is nothing. This is nothing compared to what we're about to get into.
As Voril looks at her nude body held in Rask's arms, she watches his dick get hard. Voril lets her know he would have been here sooner, but the void storm prevented it. And then he tells her that she's marked by the void. She looks down at her naked body to see she is covered in glowing runes, and Voril asks for her to go with him. This upsets Rask, though, because she hasn't actually chosen a mate. So he's like, you can't take her. She has to pick. All of a sudden, Zirin arrives and she goes straight to him and she tells him how worried she's been about him with the storm. She sees Rask and Voril puffing up to each other, trying to assert dominance, and she tells Zirin that she needs to break them up. And then she tells Rask that she wants to be properly tended to now. So he takes her back to his cave and he has like his little nest that he sleeps in. He finds a specific piece of jewelry and it's a necklace and he says it's just like her hair. And then he whispers, soon I will have the Klee stretch you for me so you can be properly mated.
Who is the Klee?
I don't know.
But then he ruins it by saying that they need to do it before the comet comes or she'll be taken from them forever.
Okay, what's that mean?
He explains that the void is vulnerable when the comet passes and she thinks that she should go talk to Voril, so they get up to go find him. Voril shows her another way back to a portal. So there's like different void portals throughout the Duskwood Manor, so you have to like know exactly where to look for them. So he shows her a way back through one and explains that the comet is the remains of an elder one who's trying to come back to this realm, and if he succeeds, he will destroy the void and leak into her world, destroying that too. So he'll just go from world to world destroying it.
The stakes are high.
Yeah. The stakes are very high. The whole world depends on this.
Yeah, Jesus. She's like, I just came here for ghosts.
And now she has to fuck or the world ends.
What if they're like lying to her? They're like,
dumb bitch.
Yeah, we're all gonna fuck you.
She does ask what this has to do with her mating Rask. And he lets her know that he is bound to like not speak of it. So she has to figure it out for herself. So he's like, yeah, I can't tell you.
That's so annoying. That pissed me right off. I'd be like, how are you gonna bring this up? And now you can't even tell me?
She asks about the idols, which we learn are beacons for lost souls to come home to. And then he leads her to an archway that is one of the portals back to Duskwood Manor. When they go through it, they end up in an empty room and he leads her back to her room. And she's like, so the purpose of inviting everyone there was for what now? And of course, he can't tell her, but he does let her know that they've been waiting for her a very long time. And she's like, so you've been waiting for all of us? He's like, you specifically.
Just you, girl.
As they walk back to her room, she notices that they're in the wing of the manor that is where Mrs. Marsh's room is. And she sees all of these photos on the wall. And in almost every single one, at least one of the girls' faces is blurry, just like her photo when she first came to the island. So she's like, huh, that must mean something. As she continues on seeing all these blurred faces, she starts to have a panic attack. And Voril says that he will take care of her, to just trust him. So he whisks her away to her room and then leaves her there to try to piece all of the information together. She opens her notebook and starts frantically drawing and writing everything she remembers, as well as the list of names of the Marsh women marked with blurry faces. Before she knows it, it's morning and she's pretty much a zombie the whole day because she didn't sleep at all. And she's like, man, I just don't really care about anything now. I want to go to the void and see my boos. As she follows Sierra to their next place of the manor to film, she sees a full apparition memory. So it's not like their actual ghost right now. It's like what happened back then. One of the apparitions is Beatrix Marsh's fiance. He threatens her and he gets shoved through this door, so it's not suicide. So remember at the beginning, Charlotte's like, all the husbands died of suicide?
Mm-hmm.
It's not what really happened.
Okay.
And this door they describe is like a door to nothing. It's just a door, and if you fall through it, it's the bottom of the cellar. Like four stories, just you die.
Okay.
So now she's questioning if every male on the island actually committed suicide, or if they just happen to threaten the Marsh women and then something happens to them. She tells Sierra that she does not feel good and she needs to go back to her room, so she hands her the script for the show but has no intention of going back to rest. Once she's in her room, she makes it as dark as possible and waits for one of her monsters, trying to piece everything together, but she ends up falling asleep. She dreams of Voril calling to her, telling her he would do such naughty things to her. He tells her to come to him, and she's vaguely aware of getting out of bed and stumbling into the closet right to the void door. This wakes her right the fuck up, and when she arrives, she announces to Voril that she thinks that she figured all of it out. He steps out from behind a column, and he admits that stories of the island that people tell and all the rumors, they're not true. She tells him that they could have their own story despite him being a monster, and then he uses his shadows to block her vision and step up behind her.
His form was solid. I felt what I wanted pushing against my ass, hot and throbbing. She wants that dick.
As he touches her, he tells her that she already has two mates, and she says that she knows, but she wants him to show her what he'd do to her. So he needs her breasts as she grinds against him, and then he undresses her, telling her that she now belongs to him, body and soul. She agrees, and he cups her vagina, growling that this is his as well. He starts stroking her, and she wants to fuck him, but knows that she can't until the void magic that Rask keeps talking about from this prince adjusts her body. So she just rubs his dick as he strokes her.
My hand couldn't fit all the way around him. The hard nubs beneath his skin were smooth as pearls under my palms, and he watched as I stroked all the way to the tip of his flared crown, running my thumb over the beaded moisture.
Oh, it's like a fun, interesting penis.
Yeah, it's got like little
bumps.
Uh-huh.
They all have interesting peni.
They kiss as she works them harder before going to her knees.
I looked up at him, my pussy aching at the sight of the titan towering over me, cockhead pearled and ready. I wrapped my lips around the head, opening my mouth as wide as it could go. It was still barely enough.
God damn.
So she tries to deep throat him, and before he comes, he stops her, saying that she needs to finish first.
Your arousal smells delicious. He knelt and easily pushed me on my back, adjusting me until I was spread eagle before him. He climbed over me, lips brushing my neck, and I'm going to taste every inch of you.
He eats her out until she's screaming and begging for him to let her come. She finishes on his tongue and then goes back to sucking his dick until he comes in her mouth and she swallows as much as she can. And she describes it as like she's swallowing and swallowing and swallowing and it's still like spewing out of her mouth.
Oh, sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah,
it does.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, it does.
Once he finishes, he picks her up and carries her through the temple until he sets her body in warm water and washes her clean. After they're done, she redresses and they start walking through the temple when a terrible smell permeates the air and three beings step from the darkness. Voril says that they're called Dagonites and she needs to flee to a door and back to her world while he takes care of it. She takes off and quickly realizes she doesn't know where the fucking door is in this place. A Dagonite races after her as she runs down spiral steps and through a hallway. She finally spots a door and it screeches as she tumbles through the darkness, landing in a room that's not hers. And for a second, she's scared that it followed her through, but the door closed right after her. She landed in Rosalie's room and Rosalie jumps up in shock as the portal closes and she screams at Juno to fucking explain what's going on.
Yeah.
Juno says, yeah, that's what they mean when they say the manor is haunted. It's just a doorway to another world.
Terrifying.
Rosalie tells her to get the fuck out of her room. She's only here for historical research, not ghost hunting, and she wants absolutely no part of it.
That's what I would say too. I'd say get away from me right now.
Get out.
Out.
Yeah. Go.
I want no part of what you're doing. Get away from me.
Before Juno leaves, she tells her that she's actually packing her shit to leave because she is tired of the random shit popping up in her room. And Juno's like, what are you talking about? She hands her a diary. Juno grabs it and leaves the room immediately. Rask is already waiting for her, so they climb into her bed and flip through the diary. The entries further confirm that the void marked women had all of their own monsters. She finds out the diary is Ruby Marsh's, the one daughter who supposedly vanished out of thin air. So she was the only one that did not die a horrific death. She just like simply disappeared. She learns from reading the diary that Ruby actually went to the void to be with her monsters. She goes to grab her black book to write and draw everything down again, but finds that it's missing. Rask tries to calm her down by putting her in a hot bath, and after a few minutes, Zirin comes up through the portal and settles in the bath with her while she explains to Rask that someone stole her stuff. They both are very attentive and massage her body until she starts to drift off to sleep, but then Rask grabs her and takes her to bed. When she wakes the next morning and goes downstairs, everyone is already saying their goodbyes to Rosalie. And once they leave, Mrs. Marsh asks her how she's liking the island, almost as if she knows what Juno's been doing. Mrs. Marsh then tells Juno to check out the lighthouse because she can see a whole lot of the
island from there. And Juno's like, there's a lighthouse. And she's like, yeah, girl, come on. She leads Juno to an underground tunnel door and tells her good luck. Before Juno goes, though, she goes up to her room to change, but is intercepted by Sierra. She's on the phone with Crispy. And when she gets on the phone to ask him how he's doing, Crispy doesn't recognize who he's talking to. They're like, it's Juno. What? Like, what's wrong with you? He's like, oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I remember you.
Weird.
As she gets back to her room to change, another puzzle piece clicks into place. The void blurred her picture from existence, so now it's doing the same for people who once knew her who aren't on the island now. And she tests the theory and pulls up her very first YouTube video. In the video, her voice is staticky and her image flickers in and out. She decides if she's gonna disappear from the real world, she might as well get to the bottom of the island and what really happens here. I would freak the fuck out.
Yeah, but she says she doesn't have anybody.
Yeah,
like, nobody that she actually really cares about. So she's like, whatever.
She sets out for the lighthouse, and when she finally climbs the set of stairs and looks out the window, she's amazed. You can literally see the whole island. And that's when she notices gray orbs floating on the water traveling to the island, and she realizes that it's all the ghosts going to the idols.
Oh.
When the storm starts, she starts to hear a woman singing again, and then she sees a woman walking on water. The ghosts start to follow this woman as she leads them to the idol, but then the lady looks directly into Juno's eyes and disappears under the waves.
No.
This book is kind of scary.
Juno thinks about her brother and if he found the stone idol on the island and passed on to the void. So she takes off running through the lighthouse and through a torrential downpour, screaming for Rask and Boral to come to her. When they arrive, she begs them to take her to the idol in the void right this second. And when they arrive, she notices ghosts coming out of the void idols and going into the sky. And that's when she notices that there aren't actual stars in the void. They're all the lost souls going to be home. And she hopes that her brother made it there. Her heart feels better than it has in years, knowing that maybe he found some peace. So her monsters take her back to her room so she can warm up in another bath. Zirin comes through the portal, and now she tells them if she's binding herself to all of them, will it help stop the Elder God from coming through? They're kind of silent for a second, and she says, if that's the case, we need to do it sooner than later because the comet doesn't have a set day. It can come whenever, at any time. All of the monsters are really excited about this. So Zirin grabs her and they go to the void so they could properly mate her.
Yeah, it's about time. Jesus Christ.
Once in the void, Zirin takes her to the shallows and asks Rask and Boral to follow. Zirin's already touching her so he could provide her the slick that will help her take them.
What's the Klee? Are we gonna find out?
So he is a Klee.
What's a Klee?
It's his type of monster.
Okay. She moaned in protest, but one of his larger appendages emerged from the water, dripping wet. His longer tentacles were as thick as our cocks, pulsing with vibrant scarlet. As we watched, pearly liquid beaded along the tentacle. He lifted Juno from the water, showing us her pussy, her clit already swollen from his attention. He said, look at this pussy.
Huzzah! Look! A prize!
He rubs the liquid all over her and then slowly pushes in. They watch as more slick comes off of it onto her, and he pushes in and grows at the same time, so to help stretch her. Both Boral and Rask are jerking off watching this until they tell Rask that he needs to hurry up and come so his knot goes down so he can fuck her next. Rask comes, literally just fire hose sprays all over Zirin and Juno.
Oh god. Zirin slipped in and out, her pussy stretched wide around him, pearly slick coating her. His arms trembled as he gripped her, close to coming himself. She is ready to be mated, he said roughly.
She is ready.
Rask stalks towards them and wipes his cum off of her, demanding she lick it from his finger. She does, and then starts to beg Rask to fuck her now, so Zirin pulls his tentacle out, and Rask slowly enters her. She was not ready to take the knot, so Zirin keeps adding more slick to help.
My breathing was shallow as the monster's knot finally popped past my entrance, a deep, intense pressure settling in my pussy. He was swelling now, the knot locking him into me behind my pelvic bone. Whatever happened now, he wasn't leaving my body until he came.
Oh,
Absolutely not.
He said, we locked in, baby.
She feels no pain as Rask fucks her brains out while one of Zirin's smaller tentacles uses Slick to work its way into her ass. Also, he says the Slick has a numbing property.
Oh.
She finally comes, and then Rask also comes.
Your pussy is so tight and delicious, my Juno. Look how much seed you took. You are the perfect me. Look how much seed you took.
The knot goes down and Rask pulls out of her. She feels super exhausted, but Zirin tells her that she's got to take Voril like a good girl. And then Voril steps up to her.
As he leaned over me, taking Rask's place, he expanded. He was nearly 15 feet tall when he knelt in the water, poising a cock the size of my forearm against me.
That's a big dick.
Yeah. She begs Voril to fuck her, so he pushes in and his rib dick feels amazing.
His rib dick?
Yeah, because it has the little pearls and stuff in it.
Oh, ribbed. I was like, what's a rib dick? Just a rack of ribs.
Yeah.
He tells her how beautiful she is taking their dick so well. And then he comes in her and she's spent. Rask says that they have to take care of her now, so they all clean her and take her back to her room. The next day, she wakes up and feels amazing for the first time in a really long time. But her good mood is quickly ruined when she's getting coffee with everyone else and sees a page of her missing notebook slip out of Eloise's notebook. She freaks out on Eloise, and we finally learn why she hates her. Eloise is like a medium. She always calls her a phony, though, like a phony medium, because she takes people's money to help them talk to their dead relatives. And so her parents killed themselves when they couldn't pay Eloise any more money to talk to their dead son. So she like extorted money out of her parents.
Yeah, I'd hate her too.
Eloise tries to stick up for herself and says that she did not make her parents come to her for help and pay her money, but Juno's too mad to listen. Voril appears and responds to her rage and finally shows himself, but only to Juno and Eloise. But Juno begs him not to hurt her, even though she hates her, and all the power goes out and he's gone. Eloise clutches her chest, mutters something about her heart, and then drops dead of a heart attack.
Good.
Rest in peace.
They call the Coast Guard, but they can't come because of the storm. So they all decide to store Eloise's body in the freezer. And Juno, for some reason, feels like really awful and just sits with the dead body in the freezer until her ghost appears. And that's when she's like, find the idol. You'll be at peace.
That's very kind of her. I would have been like, don't go to the idol.
Yeah.
After she sees Eloise's ghost disappear, she goes to her room to search for the black book, but it's nowhere to be found. Juno goes back to her own room and falls asleep in the nest that Rask made her. So he made her like a little blanket nest on her bed.
Okay, Omega.
She wakes from a nightmare to Voril and her other monsters and tells them all about it and every single thing that's ever happened in her life, which involves her brother and her parents passing.
She just hardcore trauma dumps. She's like, whew, I feel so much better now. So after our little trauma dump session, Voril brought her back to her room and then left, giving her the alone time that she needed. She knows she's going to be wiped from everyone's memory, and she wants Sierra to know that she's doing a good job with Spirit Squad, but when she went to go find her, she wasn't in her room. Lo and behold, she's getting pounded by Carson against the table in the greenhouse.
Crazy.
And Carson's her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
Oh. And Sierra knows this.
Oh, bad friend.
Sierra has a look of pure lust on her face, but Carson's face is a look of pure disgust.
What?
She's like, maybe they're hate-fucking, but like, I'm not getting in the middle of this. So she just walks away. She's like, whatever, not my problem. As she's walking away, she sees a shadow beckoning her to one of the places that's off-limits, Mrs. Marsh's bedroom. She knocks once on the door, and then it just kind of like pushes open. So she's like, all right, twist my arm. I'll snoop. When she's looking around the room, she finds a file labeled Gene Co. Ancestry. And inside is a picture with Sophie Marsh. So it turns out that Sophie Marsh attended Innsmouth Prep School from the age of 8 to 18 and then moved to Essex, which is Juno's hometown. And she's like, that's weird. But before she could look around more, she heard Mrs. Marsh walk towards her room and she panicked and then ran into the bathroom. She heard Mrs. Marsh's voice go, is that you? You, Susan? But it sounded weirdly young and playful. Mrs. March is supposed to be like a 90-year-old woman, but the voice that she just heard sounded very young. But before she could think more on it, she just dropped down into the tub into the void because she's like, I cannot get caught here. This was one of the only rooms that was off limits.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, rechalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Of course, in panic, because she dropped into the void, she totally forgot about the Dagonites, and she's, like, swimming frantically out of the void, because it's not safe in the void right now. But when she ended out of the void, of course, it was not in her room. She plopped out into none other than Porter's room, who is the skeptic. His life's journey is his YouTube channel trying to debunk their YouTube channel. Oh. So he does not believe in ghosts, he doesn't believe in anything.
That'd be Charlotte's YouTube channel.
He doesn't believe in any of it, so he's like, none of this is real, this is all false, and he's here to try to debunk everything.
Well, how's he gonna do that when he just saw her fall through a portal?
Yeah, exactly. And Rask has a feeling that his Pookie is up to no good, so he follows her scent. He's like, where is she? He smells her, and he smells that she's been in the void, and that she's in a human's male's room. He's peeking out from under the bed. And he also smells a very faint whiff of two other monsters that's coming off of Juno. And he's like, oh, hell no. You've been where? With who? So he growls very loudly. Juno's like, oh, shit. And Porter's like, what the fuck was that? Juno tries covering it up, but Porter's not having it. And he's kind of talking down on Juno. He's like, what the fuck is going on? And that makes Rask very angry. So he comes out from under the bed in his full monster form. He says, do not speak to my mate like that. And Porter just has a full-blown mentee bee.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd shit myself.
Yeah.
Juno just sighs and she just gives him the full rundown. She's like, okay, fine, crash course. There's a whole nother world, a void, monsters, everything exists. And he is having a crisis because he's like, no, literally no. I just spent my entire life trying to debunk things like this. You'll have to take me there. And she's like, all right, who am I to say no? Why should I keep this from you? If I can go there, sure, we'll take you. So they go under the bed and Rask takes him into the void. And Porter completely loses his mind. He begs for them to keep him there. And although she knows that this may mean the end of his life because it's so unsafe there as a human, he's a grown man who can make his own decisions. So they let him stay there.
Why would you want to stay there?
He has a full, like, mental psychosis breakdown of how amazing this place is. And he's not fucking leaving. You can't make him leave. And she's like, you're right. You a grown man. Stay.
Crazy.
He's like, a place like this exists and you want me to go back to Earth? So they leave Porter there. Whatever. Bye. Juno woke up in her bed with Rask cuddling next to her in the next morning. They woke up horny as fuck and decided to do something about it. So Juno straddled his face and Rask went to town.
Two hands held my hips, keeping me positioned exactly where he wanted me so he could feast. They lifted me up and down, forcing me to sit on the monster's face over and over, his tongue plunging into me with every downwards drop. Moans poured from my lips, the fire inside me growing, spreading until it consumed all of me. An odd sensation I'd never felt before grew inside me, a strange pressure that made me squirm and shudder in his grip. Rask growled with pleasure, gripping me hard and plunging me back down. His tongue hit a spot that made the pressure explode, and I burst. Liquid sprayed out of me, coating his tongue as he lapped ravenously at my pussy. I gasped, knees shaking. What? I'd squirted.
Wow.
That had never happened before in my entire life. Not even close. But Rask was humming, his tongue running over my pussy and the inside of my thighs. Yes, my good little one. You taste so delicious. I could eat you up.
Yeah, I would be afraid that he would actually eat me up.
She says, that was amazing. But I'm still horny and I want to fuck all of my monsters. Rask was like, well, baby, you've only had us once and your tight little puss can't take us again yet. She said, listen, I'm hella soaked and we don't know if we can't try. He said, okay, fine. I'll fuck you. We can try.
I need to make you come, Rask. I breathed. So I can fit all of you inside me. Yes, be a good girl and stroke my cock. One of his hands cradled my ass as I began pumping a shaft. Make me come and I will coat you with my seed.
She tries fitting his monster dick in, but was only able to take an inch. He said, no worries. Let's find the rest of the monsters. We'll mate and we can make it fit. Rask whistled and Zirin came. He said, Avenger Squad, unite. And they said, coming right up. I'll be right there. He knew right away that his little human was horny and needy. So Zirin's tentacles wrapped themselves around her and they were ready to enter.
I sucked in a breath and groaned as he began to slip inside, his tentacles swelling as he filled me. Fuck, that feels so good, I whimpered. You're so tight, little mate. His voice was low and hungry, his tentacles wound around my hips and ass, holding me to him as he began to fuck me with slow, gentle strokes. strokes, the tentacles leaking slick all over me. I don't know why, but the word slick, gross.
I don't like it.
No. Gross.
It's a very slick heavy episode too.
Yes. It's slick, slick, slick.
Zarin finished and it's Rask's turn. He's hella hard and he can't wait until they're bound so he can fuck her senseless every single day. She's missing Vorl, but he's busy prepping for the comet and he's in a form too big for her tiny human body to take. She literally was like, I don't care. I have to have sex with all three of you right now. We have to be 100% bonded before the comet. Zarin and Rask, they look at each other and they're like, all right, fine. And they decided to call him.
I turned my head and my mouth dropped open. Vorl was striding over the sand towards us, his horns gleaming with light, but he was enormous, stretching towards the sky, shadows spilling out of him and darkening the island. He was always tall, towering at least 12 feet, but this, it was like looking up at a skyscraper. He was at least 40 feet high. Okay, what?
He says, I've come to fuck you.
So he extended his hand that is the size of a couch, and she climbed into it. She looked at his dick, and in this form, it's 8 feet long and is as thick as the barrel. She's looking at the skyscraper dick, and she's like, oh, lightning bulb, I have an idea. She bets that she can still make him come in this form. So he brings her to his dick, and she straddles it.
Didn't you say it's 8 feet long?
Yeah. And as thick as a barrel.
It's like an ant crawling on your dick.
Yeah, she's like, I'm gonna make you come. I'm just gonna, like, slide up and down your entire penis.
She's literally snail trailing along his dick. Because she still has Rask and Zirin's slick coming out of her from just having sex. So she's snail trailing along this skyscraper couch size dick.
It's only 8 feet tall.
I never want to see a dick that big.
I don't think you'll ever see a dick that big.
No.
No.
No. Not in our lifetime.
Hopefully not.
So she's humping this massive monster dick frantically and comes. Then he grabs his dick from below and starts stroking it while she's still on him. And then he comes. What a sight to behold.
Yeah. Beneath me, his entire shaft jerked. I felt the pressure in it as cum sprayed from him, flying hundreds of yards. A whole fucking flood of it. If he had done it on me, I probably would have drowned. That would have been a hell of a way to go. Drowning in semen. Yeah. Scary.
She's like, well, monsters, this has been fun, but I got human things to do, so I'm gonna go back to Earth. So Rask took her back to her room. She showered, changed, and then went downstairs to the kitchen. And when she walked in, every single person looked at her in shock. And Sierra was like, Juno, where the hell have you been, Loca? Not really. She was like, where the fuck were you? Apparently, while in the void, she was gone for 3 days, fucking her monsters. She knew that they could warp time, but she didn't know that she spent 3 blissful days fucking her monsters. And she didn't know how to tell the regular people that.
The fucking normies.
Porter is obviously still missing. And again, she didn't know how to tell them that he wouldn't be coming back. So she's like, I don't know. He's probably hiding out, writing a book somewhere. Beats me. You never seen him. Keep looking.
Where's Porter?
Her notebook is still missing. And Sierra was obvious, like, she's super stressed that it's still missing, so she crossed her off of her suspect list. So that only leaves Carson and Jack. She decided to look in their room and was caught red-handed by Carson, who was like, really? You think I stole your notebook? And she was like, well, in college when we were dating, you literally stole my idea and then started a whole YouTube channel, so yeah, I wouldn't put it past you. He's like, ugh, whatever, forget about that. I have a great idea. Let's join Dead Space and Spirit Squad. You get rid of your cameraman. Jack's way better. Sierra kind of sucks, and the viewers just watch it for you anyways. She's like, what do you mean they watch it for me? He tells her that because her whole life is a huge tragedy and she, like, hunts ghosts, the audience just eats it up. If they were to go back to her childhood home to try to see her brother's ghost, it would bring in so much money. She was, like, completely disgusted by his lack of empathy and just him in general. She wanted absolutely nothing to do with him and said, no, absolutely not. And this just gave her the extra validation that she needed to mate with her monsters and to just be rid of this world forever.
Go into the void, girl.
But Juno starts having a panic attack because she's like, what if fucking them twice wasn't enough for the void to recognize the mating between them? She stepped into the shower and called into the void asking for Zarin to come up and if he could hear her. It took way longer than usual, but finally he was there. Due to the comet's closeness, it's hard for them to cross from the void, but he reassured her that the bond is there, and every time that they've touched, the bonds deepen. But just to be sure,
I'm going to feel every bit of you, little one, he murmured, arms tightening around me. Every single hole will be mine. Even your ass.
And ladies and gents, that he does.
I let out a shuddering breath as he delicately pushed in both holes at once. My back arched and the tentacles around my breast tightened, the suction cups clamping down tightly on my nipples. Heat burst through me. Although by all rights, I should have been satisfied. These monsters were never enough.
How, girl?
She said 8 feet of dick? Not enough for me.
I need more.
She gave one of his tentacles the Gluck Gluck 3000, and he was anywhere and everywhere all at once. He came in her puss. He came in her ass. He came down her throat. And finally, she was sated. Just for now. As she came down, she noticed that his heart was going crazy fast. And then he was, like, seizing.
Oh, no.
And then he let out a deep groan.
His lower tentacles were merging, becoming two distinct limbs. I watched, my hand covering my mouth, as the form of thick, muscular legs took shape, ending in clawed feet.
He got his legs.
It was like the Little Mermaid.
The tentacles on his face grew longer, thicker, spilling forward. He was growing larger, as big as Rask, arms and torso thickening. I was frozen in place as he finally stopped shuddering, still crouched on the grotto floor. Then he stood, eyes flaring a deep yellow. The rings had faded to nothing but a gleaming pattern on his skin, and now he stood on two massive legs, his rigid skull trailing down to two leathery wings sprouting from his back. He looked down at himself, at the cock that almost resembled Vorl's, nubbed and rigid, the legs.
What?
He just had to fill every hole, and then he got his legs. Yeah. That's how it works.
Damn. Okay.
It's his metamorphosis.
Yeah.
Okay.
He tells her that they've completely bonded, and he is now full Klee. He has become a protector, and he's able to protect the void against the comet, and he can now come and go between sea and land as a guardian now.
Thanks to her asshole.
I was gonna say, all he needed to do was fuck someone, and he's like, I am protector now.
Well, you know, DP leads to bipedal modes, so you can just
that
get
is
some
true.
Legs if you do that.
That's what they teach you.
Yeah, it's Klee 101.
Read the handbook.
Duh.
Zurin is in awe that his little human was able to do this for him, and she was about to ask more questions when they hear a piercing scream. The Dagonites had a human in their grasp, and it took all of 0.3 seconds for Juno to forget going to safety and wanting to rescue the human. Zurin tried pleading with her that the human was dead anyways, even if they were alive right now. They would rather kill the human than give it up, but still she was not having it. She had to try to save them. Unfortunately, though, it was too late. The Dagonite's claw snatches out and went straight across Jack's neck.
And that's Carson's friend.
Yeah. Oh, no.
How did he get there?
Yeah, they're in the void, aren't they?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Juno was sucked into a triangular doorway, and Zurin was able to plunge after her seconds before that door closed to follow after her. The void spit them out into none other than the basement of the manor.
The no-no place.
It's the only other forbidden place. She's 0 for 2.
Yeah.
When she asked Zurin if he was coming, he told her that this place is for her eyes only alone, and she's like, okay.
I mean, if he told me that, I'd say, get me out of here then. Because if you're saying that, no.
But she does have this feeling of belonging. She knows that there's something in here for her, so she just keeps going. So she finds this monument. I don't think it's an idol. It's just like a monument. Kind of like a shrine. And on it reads, "Let this covenant bind us, earth and void, the lady and the keepers. Together we hold the line. Together we keep our silence. I am beholden unto no man, but bound to the void. I pledge my body for the gatekeepers, my life for the gates, and my soul for the eternity of the stars." And Zurin confirmed that this is the covenant of Sarah. So she's like, oh, shit, this is really important. And she memorized the words into her mind. And remember the very beginning of the story, she said that the basement is where everything first took place.
Mm-hmm.
Zurin got her out of the basement because he just bulldozed through brick. After everything that she learned today, she knew that she would do everything in her power to make sure that the ritual worked. When she gets back to her room, there's an invitation from Mrs. Marsh for a formal dinner at 9 p.m. sharp. It's the next day, and in the morning, she finds Mrs. Marsh in the garden. She tells her right now she must remain silent, but soon she can break that silence as long as Juno does her part, and then she can be a proper mentor to her. She gets to the dining room, and it's just Carson at the table, and it's exactly 9 p.m. It's set up for four people, but it's just them two. The other two are presumably Sierra and Jack. There's a tray with a silver dome on the table. That's it. And under the dome is a letter that says your inheritance with a skeleton key that Mrs. Marsh always wore around her neck.
Where's Mrs. Marsh?
Carson's like, oh, your inheritance? And she's like, that's not for you. This is for me. And he's like, what do you mean? She grips the key and she's like, yes,
I'm a Marsh by blood. As soon as she said that, something like cold switches in Carson. He tells her, he's like, give me the key. She's like, absolutely not happening. And she takes a step back and she feels something soft under her foot. And when she looks down, she sees that she's stepping on someone's hand. Sierra's. When she looks up, the last thing she saw before everything went black was Carson swinging something towards her face and then a bright light. Juno wakes up to her and Sierra tied to a chair and Carson smiling over her. He revealed to her that Jack stole her notebook and he ended up finding much more interesting information in it. When she was meeting the monsters, she was keeping notes on everything that she was learning about the monsters. So Carson found out that there's a whole nother world of monsters and breeds and he knows all about it now.
Well, this isn't going to end well for you, Carson.
She tells him that Jack is dead, trying to get some type of reaction out of him. And he's like, oh, well, I was the one that pushed him through the door anyways. Just to see where it led. Business and all, you understand. So that's how Jack ended up through the portal, is because they found the door and he just pushed him through. Now that Carson knows that there's a whole nother world with monsters and with proof, people would pay millions for that information and for the monsters. They would be beyond rich. He's even willing to let Juno take half the pay if she would just work with him on this. She's like, are you out of your mind? Her head is killing her, but a thought comes through. Carson needs her alive because she is a Marsh by blood. Without her to seal the ritual, the doors to the void would remain closed forever, and she would rather be dead than be responsible for the death of her Pookies and the destruction of the world because of the comet. Carson knows that there has to be a sacrifice, and he plans for Sierra to be the sacrifice. That's why she's still alive. He unties Juno's legs from the chair. He picks up a still unconscious Sierra, and he gets them moving up the stairs towards his big plans. Juno tries to get her wrist bindings undone using blood as lubrication while Carson was slapping Sierra awake, and he brings them to the top of a four-story staircase. There's a sensation in Juno that she realizes means that there's an open door to the void nearby, and it's like begging her to get near it. Carson was about to push Sierra down the staircase to her death as the sacrifice, and just as he was about to do that, Juno ran and plowed into both of them, sending all three of them over the edge. And they're now falling into the void, which I think that her original plan was to kill all three of them. Like, I think she was like, I would rather all of us die than this. But she ended up falling right through the void. And they landed into something hundreds of feet above the sand, straight into Voril's claws. Voril puts them on the sand, and Juno lunged at Carson, who's still groaning, and she grabbed the skeleton key from his wrist. So he took the skeleton key from her when she was unconscious, and he put it around his wrist like a wristband. So she took the skeleton key back. Just as he was about to lunge for her, Voril's claws caged him in. She saw other monsters actively guarding the void against the comet and the Dagonites, and Rask told her to make the sacrifice. She looked up at Voril, gripped the key, and then recited the words that she memorized yesterday. As she said the last words of the covenant, everything and everyone apart from her monsters froze. Carson was a hair away from plunging his knife into Sierra's heart. Voril confirmed that the covenant is now sealed and picked up Carson as time continued on. Voril said, with the sacrifice of Carson's blood, it will now bind the gates. The skeleton key burned into her hand and then went cool. And when she looked up, Sierra lay still alive and the comet has passed. So they sacrificed Carson to the comet. They just like pushed him up into like, the burning sun. And he was like screaming.
Oh,
he was
shit. Like,
which good.
Bye, Carson.
Elizabeth Marsh was there, only now she's not 90 years old, she's 20.
Oh.
She extended her hand to her and saw the imprint of the skeleton key on her hand that she now has. She confirmed that the comet is now gone for another 100 years, and by then she will have a daughter who will receive her own inheritance and renew the covenant, and then she will be free. Elizabeth mates greet her, and they're so happy because now they are free of this world. Once their 100 years are up, the covenant is passed on, and they can move into the void with their monsters and live for an eternity. She's like taking in all this information, and Elizabeth also reassures her that Sierra will be completely okay, but she will not remember any of this. By the time that she leaves the island, Juno will be completely forgotten by everyone. She gets back to her monsters, and they're so happy that they have their Pookie for the next 100 years and all of eternity. Voril healed her concussion, and still, our girl only has dick on her mind. And now that they're bonded, she can get DP'd with the monster dicks anytime.
I was so full, I couldn't take anymore. Rask was roaring, spraying what felt like gallons of cum deep in my womb, the pearly liquid leaking out and splattering on the floor around us. Beautiful.
It's just beautiful sights, behold. Then Voril came all over her face, her hair, her stomach.
Not her hair.
Yeah, everywhere. They all said, this is literally the best day ever. We're gonna wash you, feed you, and then do this all over again. And she's like, I love my life. The end.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
I don't know if monsters are, like, necessarily my jam, you know?
That's fair.
I think I'll give it 3.5.
Okay. And do you think any of the monsters are sexy?
No. Unfortunately, no.
Would you trade places with Juno?
God, no. No, not for me. Sorry.
All right. So next week, we're telling Riley all about Lights Out by Nevessa Allen. And we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
All right. It's got like a skull on the cover and I think flowers. And it says, the couple who slays together stays together. I think it's going to be about a bad man and a bad girl. Like they're both villains, you know? And they don't like each other in the beginning. I think it'll be an enemies to lovers. Quite possibly. And they link up and they start killing people together. And then they form a relationship. You know, the whole thing. How'd I do?
No.
No.
All right. Well,
can't win them all.
You
win some, Riley.
You lose some. Can't win them all.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at @SmutUpAndListenPodcast and on TikTok at @SmutUpAndListen.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at @SmutUpAndListenPodcast and on TikTok at @SmutUpAndListen.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.